Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the Soundcheck Podcast from newsounds.org and streaming live on Facebook. I'm John Schaefer. John Paul White is a multiple Grammy Award-winning singer and songwriter. He was half of the hugely successful Americana duo The Civil Wars. But John Paul was a solo artist before that band and is once again. His latest solo album is called Beulah. And it is a richly textured collection of songs about love and loss and heartbreak and the South. John Paul White is here in our Soundcheck studio to play some songs for us today, beginning with this one called Black Leaf. That is John Paul White and a solo acoustic performance of the song Black Leaf, which is on the last record called Beulah. John Paul, first of all, it's great to have you back with us on Soundcheck.
It's good to see you.
The first time I heard that song and it began and I was like, oh, he hit a wrong note. Wait, he hit it again. Oh, that's really cool. How did you, I mean, the sort of the quote-unquote wrong note harmony there is an amazing sound.
The only way I can explain it is it's just a happy accident. I just fingered the chord incorrectly.
So and it was a wrong note.
It was totally a wrong note. And I thought, I like that tension there. I like the dissonance of it. And I thought, you know, how long can I get away with that? You
think,
I'm always looking for the angle. I'm a pop guy. You know, I grew up with country music, the more popular versions of country music and pop music. And so I am a slave to those structures, but I like to find a little angle, a little something to keep myself interested along with everybody else.
Yeah. And it ends up driving the song, that little, that happy accident there.
I think so. You couldn't get away with just playing that six minor over and over. I mean, I'd be bored. I know you would be. So.
the line that you repeat, there's always a second time around. Mm. You know, you could look at your career and see that line is kind of almost emblematic of what you've done going from solo to Civil Wars back to solo. Do you feel like you're restarting?
In some ways, yes. And it's also, you know, it's kind of a hopeful statement, you know, that you don't know if there's a second time around, but, you know, here's to the chances that there are. It's a weird situation that I've been in because when we went on hiatus, I didn't intend to do anything else. Creatively, I didn't want to walk across the street and play a song for anybody. I was done. And I wouldn't look at it in a totally negative light. I was really happy to be home for the first time in about 10 years and not think about packing my suitcase and not think about, do I have new strings on my guitar? To be able to listen to my kids talk about their day at school or my wife and fully listen to what they're saying. And I hadn't done that in a long time. And it was novel and it was something that I really enjoyed. So I didn't draw a line in the sand and say I'll never make music again, but I didn't see that happening.
Hmm. So how did Beulah end up happening?
It beat its way out of my head. every time I'd get, I didn't even sing in the shower for, it seems like a year and a half maybe, but then these things started growing back and melodies started coming, and I tried to shove them down. I tried not to write them, and I thought I could because I always thought that I was a songwriter by craft and not by inspiration.
Huh.
Because I wrote songs for the Nashville market for about 10 to 12 years before the Civil War, so I learned how to turn it on and turn it off. And when I'd hear people talk about, oh, I was up last night and I couldn't go to sleep, I had this song in my head, I'd think, whatever. You're just romanticizing what we do. I don't believe it at all. So once I was completely silent, that started happening to me. Instead of me looking for it, it forced me to sit down and put pen to paper.
Huh. Interesting, because I was going to ask if you consider yourself a natural-born storyteller, but maybe there's no easy answer to that question.
I doubt there is. I would say that I probably am. I come from a long line of storytellers and liars and people that grossly, overemphasize the importance of things and make up stories as they go. I definitely do that, but I thought I wrote songs just to get to do what I do for a living. I just wanted to sing. Hmm. I didn't grow up wanting to be a songwriter. I enjoyed creative writing, and I enjoyed great songs, definitely.
Yeah.
But that didn't drive me. I didn't have that incessant need to document my feelings at all. I kind of thought that was silly. I thought it was vain. I thought it was ego. And I thought, I just want to sing and get the girl. And songwriting was an avenue in for me because I was at the University of North Alabama and Walt Aldridge was there, who was a songwriter with EMI. And I saw an opportunity. I said, you know what, can I come to your company and write songs? And so we tried it out, and I ended up a professional writer, having only written maybe four or five songs before. So I learned on the job.
And so for you, it was a craft as opposed to an art.
Yes.
Hmm. Has that changed?
Oh, it's definitely changed.
Yeah.
It's definitely changed. And that's second times around, I do feel like there's a rebirth because of that, because I write songs because I really am driven to, as opposed to the way I used to, because I knew, all right, another album coming, mm-hmm. or my publisher needs a quota of X. I never was afforded the opportunity to write just purely for the love of writing. And that's where I am. And it's blissful. Hopefully it continues.
Yeah. Well, you know, some of your songs and many of the Civil War songs were kind of lumped into this term Southern Gothic, which is mostly, you know, from literature. You think of Flannery O'Connor,
sure.
Faulkner,
sure.
Walker Percy. Were those sure. were those heroes of yours growing up in Alabama?
Faulkner, yes. And then later I got into Tom Franklin and Larry Brown and things like that. But I think it's just a knee-jerk, easy thing to reference when it comes to that Southern accent, not singing a country song. I think
right.
that happens a lot. And it's also lumped into the Americana thing. I tend to not think about it too much. Mm. And the more I write, the better I am at pushing that stuff to the side and not worrying too much about what box it's in or what box it isn't. To the detriment, you know, of it'd probably be an easier project for people around me to work if I fit neatly into box. But I've also surrounded myself with people that have embraced me because I don't. But the whole Southern Gothic thing, I don't mind that at all.
Yeah.
It's a world I'm definitely immersed in.
Yeah. I mean, a song like Barton Hollow has a very dark and gothic flavor to it. We heard just a little bit of What's So at the beginning of this session from the record Beulah, and that, you know, that kind of whole thing, but the difference between what should be and what actually is, you know, that kind of feeling that you get in a lot of those Flannery O'Connor short stories, for example.
Right. And that song is definitely my blatant attempt to somewhat explain the Southern, especially the Southern male disposition, because I was definitely raised to keep your head down, don't put on airs, you're no better than anyone else, you're no worse than anyone else, but we're all in this together, do good work. And it was actually a negative thing for someone to increase their station. It was subtle, but it was there. Like, I went to a little private school, but it was only private because it was a Catholic school. It was all blue-collar farmer families. And the kids that got bullied was the kids that had things and bragged about them. Mm-hmm. They were ostracized. So that's the world I was immersed in, and that's where that song comes from. But the more I play it around the country and even overseas, and I talk to people about it, and they're like, you know, that's not a Southern thing. I had the same thing where I grew up, and it's interesting. It's opened my eyes to a lot of things that we sing about in the South, and we think we're unique and we think we're different from everyone else when we're all kind of struggling together and we're all thriving together and we're all working it out. And, it's not a uniquely Southern thing.
Well, but it is the mark of a good song when it's that specific that it transcends its specificity and becomes kind of universal.
I try to keep it just vague enough on the edges that that can happen.
Yeah.
Walt, who I mentioned earlier, he told me once, never put a wedding ring in a song. And what he was talking about was if you make it that specific, if you go all the way to that, you've just ostracized everyone that's single. They can't see themselves in that as the actor, as the person in the play. You just take that one little object out and you've included everyone. Mm. And it's not cheapening the song by doing it. And so that's always in the back of my head. I never want to just be 100% personal and document something I feel. I'd rather hit the edges of it and make a connect the dots and let someone from any walk of life become that person in the song.
But you also, you can't be completely vague. You need those telling details that make it real.
A little furniture.
Yeah, exactly.
Furniture.
We're speaking with John Paul White, playing for us here in the Soundcheck studio today. The capo's being moved up the neck of the guitar. What do you want to play for us next?
I'm giving you the illusion that I'm an adept songwriter. And, I'm going to play a song for you called The Once and Future Queen, if that's all right with you.
All right.
An obvious literary ripoff.
All right, it's John Paul White, live on Soundcheck.
is gonna hold your hand and everything will click. Touch you in some unknown way that finally does the trick. Pull you in a fairy tale where you were meant to be. Someone, but someone won't be me. Someone's out there praying for the day that you walk in, and happy ever after you finally begin. Someone who'll starve in nothing to give you all you need. Someone, but someone won't be me. And that's okay. I never really loved you anyway. At least not unconditionally. Like subjects, loved ones, and future queens. If I thought I was good for you, if I thought this could work, someone won't be me. And that's okay. I never really loved you anyway. Not enough to meet me halfway. All love is something only take. That's okay. I never really loved you anyway. At least not unconditionally. Like subjects, loved ones, and future queens.
That is John Paul White live in the Soundcheck studio in his song called The Once and Future Queen. John Paul is playing for us here in the Soundcheck studio today. John Paul, what did you think when the folks at Lincoln Center called and invited you to be part of the American Songbook series?
I thought they were out of touch and were grasping at straws. I don't try to overthink these things. I'm always, as we were talking about with What's So, I'm always all shucks about everything. And I always think, why me? Why now? But it's obviously a great room, a great place to play. And I looked at the lineup and I saw Randy Newman and I saw Roseanne Cash. And then I saw also all the more eclectic fringe performers that were going to be a part of it. And I thought, this is something that I'm meant to be a part of, and I'm happy to be.
Because, you know, when we say American Songbook, most people think, they're thinking George and Ira Gershwin, sure. Johnny Mercer, you sure. know, Jerome Kern, et cetera, Cole Porter.
Sure.
But obviously a songbook can't stop in 1950, you
That's
know.
That's exactly right. And the beauty of having relationships now with somebody like Roseanne Cash and Rodney Crowell and people of their ilk, I get such a strong sense of how much that matters to them, to carry that torch and to fill those shoes and to make it your own thing, but also carry on that tradition. And I didn't really look at what we do that way for a lot of my life. It was just doing something that made me happy.
Mm-hmm.
And then as I got out into the world and talked to people about how songs move them and how songs are such an important part of their lives and will be for the rest of their lives, and really was more objective about how songs shape the way I see the world, it became a whole lot more of a holy thing than it was.
Hmm. So where are you now in the songwriting process? I mean, Beulah's a 2016 record, so
That's right.
you kind of do.
It's true. This was a different rollout than most because I didn't want to come out of the woodwork and be like, hey, I'm back. Buy my record. You miss me? You know, that felt very disingenuous. And luckily, everyone around me was willing to be a lot more, you know, intentional about the way that I came out. And so from the beginning, we played like four shows that we didn't even announce just to see if I'd play these shows and then run screaming for home and never want to do it again. But little by little, I'd talk to everyone after every show and got this sense of, okay, people aren't just here out of curiosity. They're connecting with these songs. I could tell from those conversations. I thought, as long as that's the case, I want to continue doing this. And not because I love being in a van on, you know, in Kansas in the winter. It's those are things that you do because you love it so much and you're driven to do it. And that was not necessarily the case, but is now.
Mm-hmm.
So where I'm at the moment is I took advantage of my having a major publisher, BMG, and said, you know what? I want to do some writing. I want to do some co-writing. So how about we go try to find all my heroes, my country music specifically heroes, the Bobby Braddocks and Waylon Holyfields and Sonny Throckmortons and all the people that made me want to write a country song, see what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Some of them weren't writing at all. And their answer would be, well, nobody really wants my songs anymore, so I don't really write that much. And we were like, you're perfect. You're exactly what we want. So to a man, they all agreed to do it. And it was a great exercise for me because I feel like a pretender when I write a country song. Even though I was immersed in it my whole life and love it, I'm not Merle Haggard, and I wish I was, but I'm not. And so sometimes when I write a country song, I'm like, is this an approximation? Is this the real thing? And sitting at their knee and writing and getting their feedback and their encouragement, I felt like, okay, this is a whole avenue that I can explore and not feel like a pretender.
And it's also, it's a two-way street because now you'll be introducing this generation of songwriters to people who have no idea who they are.
I will not pretend that that wasn't a huge part of it because I'm sick to death of eulogies. I'm tired of people finding out, people talk about how amazing Leon Russell was after he died.
Right.
Everybody's right. a Leon Russell fan now. And great. I'm thrilled that they know his discography, but it's people like that that, you know, and we're losing them all the time, you know, the Don Williams of the world.
Well, even someone like Elliott Smith in the world of rock music, you know, yeah. Look at what happened to his reputation after he died.
I know.
You know?
And so I'm trying to, what I'm going to do is a video series that I need to get started on and play songs by people that are here and turn people on to people like, you know, a lot of people know Bill Anderson, but a lot of people from my world probably don't. And they may know his songs and they may not, but they should.
Grand Ole Opry guy, right?
Yes, sir. And I grew up with him listen to my dad's records, but also he was a game show host on the Nashville Network. So when I walked in, it was a big deal.
Wow.
Whispering Bill. I couldn't believe Anderson. I was in the same room with him, much less. And his energy level was off the charts. He still dearly loved writing a song. And I want to be that guy.
All right. So yeah. You're going to play a song that you and Bill have co-written.
I will.
So how old is he now? He's got to be 80s?
Well, that would make sense, but I've been in the room with many 20 or 30-year-olds that do not have that same creative spark that he does. Yeah. It's fascinating. I mean, he wakes up every day looking to make something better than he did the day before, and it's palpable. And I fed off of it. I mean, it really gave me a spark, and so I've written like 3 songs with him. I keep going back to that well.
Uh-huh. And this one is called...
This is called I Wish I Could Write You a Song.
Which you were telling me before we went on mic today is its current title. It might end up just being called Wish.
It's too much of a mouthful. I don't. In the South, we make everything shorter and drop off all the words we can.
Sure.
So this is called Wish.
It's John Paul White, live on Soundcheck.
I could write you a song. I am trying so long. Every rhyme feels wrong. I wish I could come up with words, words that the world's never heard.
John Paul White, live on Soundcheck. I wish I could write you a power ballad, could well be the title of
that. Yes, we just need Marshall stacks and everything just to screw people's brains up.
So you co-wrote that with Whisperin' Bill Anderson.
I did.
Star of stage and screen.
I did.
So what's going to happen with the songs you've written with him and with these other, you know, this these other guys from...
We shall see. They will definitely see light of day. I have a feeling some of them will end up on a record to come soon. I've got a bunch of them. So it might be best served to do a little package of those songs so they live on their own, and I can fully promote it in a way that shines all the spotlight on them. So I'm actively figuring that out, but I want to write a bunch more songs and have a good stacked pull from.
When you say I, do you mean I, you, or I as in we, me and these other writers?
We'll see. We'll see. I some of the guys, they don't play much anymore, and so they're just fonts of knowledge and lyrical ideas, and I'm the guy with the guitar in the room, but we'll see. We'll figure that out.
Okay.
They're going to be involved, and you're going to see their face, and you're going to know their discography, and you're going to know that your soundtrack to your life was shaped by these men and women, and you should pay homage.
I'm glad you you said before, to a man, they all agreed. And so are there women in that generation?
There are. And it's not a long list of people that I'm working with, but Sarah Vaughan is one for sure. And she...
Not that Sarah.
No. she wrote My Heroes Have Always Been Cowboys is still just lyrically brilliant. We wrote a song in less than an hour. And... It's funny because each time that we'd start writing a song, you could see their eyes light up because they hadn't been asked to go there in a while. Like when I wrote with Bill, Mr. Anderson, it felt weird saying Bill. I started writing a song in waltz time, and he just lit up. He was like, oh, a waltz. I haven't written a waltz in years. And I'm like, how could you not have written a waltz in years? Like, this is a travesty. I'm so glad I'm here right now.
All right. So we'll look forward to seeing some of these songs, hopefully sooner rather than later.
Hope so.
I won't try to pin you down any more than that, because obviously I won't succeed if I do.
It would do no good. You could grill me all you want to, but even though I am the label and the artist, we'll see. We have lots of things on the plate, so we'll see how it works.
Right. Lots of balls in the air now. Okay. Yep.
And it's Sharon Vaughan, not Sarah Vaughan. I knew something didn't feel right there.
Yeah, so Sharon Vaughan. Yeah. Okay.
Sorry.
John Paul White has been with us here in the Soundcheck studio today. John Paul, it's great to see you again. Thank you so much.
It's great to see you. Thanks for having me.
This is Soundcheck.
These are the words that I'm not letting you. The ones that I deserve seem so real. So bring it on. I'll soldier on.
That's all for this Soundcheck podcast. Hear other Soundcheck podcasts and see other videos online at newsounds.org. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. Our associate producer is Karen Havlick. Our video producer is Justin Sergi. I'm John Schaefer. Thanks for being with us.
But that ain't me, 'cause I'm the martyr. Down a little more, setting back.